Okay, this is the October 4th Finance Committee meeting. First item on the agenda is to call to order, which we will now do. And two is to consider a finding that as a result of the COVID-19 emergency, meeting in person would present imminent risks to the health or safety of attendees, and the meeting is authorized to be held by teleconference pursuant to Government Code 54953. Marty, okay with you?
Yeah, I concur.
Okay, we will move to comments from the public if there are any upfront comments. Amelia?
I do have a hand raised, John Sullivan.
Okay.
Can we bring up an account issue under utility billing update rather than do it in comments here now for the
public? Yeah, you can do that on any item, John. That's fine. We're there, I guess. If there are no more comments from the public, Amelia, anything else?
No more hands raised. No.
All right. Well, for convenience sake, then why don't we? No, let's do it this way. Yeah. I was going to, because there's more involved, and let's do the general update on current finance first, and then
let's just follow the memo. Do you have the memo up, Amelia?
I do.
So again, Paula's on vacation this week, so I'm going to report on her report. We've been making pretty steady process with getting the paperwork necessary for primarily the FY21 audit, working with the Poon Group and some other resources that they have available, as well as Chris and Susan in our office. I believe they're on track to get the information in, you know, in a reasonable amount of time, even though it's unreasonable to this point to be this late, but that's the route we're going. And I believe Vanessa's going to be on the call, but I don't see her yet. So she's going to get in on the call and talk about the budget to actual reporting. So the budget to actual reporting there's a big paragraph that Paula wrote. But it basically identifies that we're working with aged software, not designed for government accounting. We're dealing with a high degree of turnover for a variety of reasons. And then we have an integration with some software that the district purchased in about 2008, 2006, I think, named as Stiva. And it's a web-based purchasing system that we built in some integration techniques with the Stiva like 3 years ago, and the staff who learned how to use it didn't exactly do cross training as they were leaving. And so, as you can see right there in the middle of the paragraph, it frequently breaks down and creates additional workload, and then we end up doing dual entry in Great Plains and the Stiva. So it's really problematic to not know how to use software and to try to make it work. And so we're working with our staff, and we're kind of consulting with Vanessa Burke along the way as to best practices. And hopefully we make progress on that. And she's going to talk about the budget to actuals in a few seconds here later on. Go ahead and scroll down a little bit more, Amelia. And then we have, we've made contact with Tyler Technologies to kick off our project to implement their enterprise resource planning system called ENCODE. And we reached out to them and said we were ready to go. And they came back and they said, well, how about we take most of your staff time all next week for step one? And we just, Paula has a day where she's not going to be here. And, you know, we need a little bit more time to plan ahead. We're going to try and get them some information. They have something called the CFSA format. That it's a spreadsheet that they want us to fill in a bunch of data. And I'm going to be working on that. Then Paula's absent later today. So I don't think we're going to kick it off tomorrow, but I think we're going to kick it off in the next month or two at some level.
So let me ask you something here. First of all, you know, there are, in my mind anyway, there are four functions or four modules as they relate to the new and old system that we work on. You know, one is customer bills, one is AP payables, Another's payroll, and another one is receivables, which, you know, links into deposits and reconciliations and all that stuff. You know, in light of this very large paragraph that outlines, you know, how fragile what we presently do is, how does the plan work going forward from where we are now until we integrate this into the new system? And I guess the follow-up question I have with that is, in this new system that we are currently proposing, are all of these modules then self-contained? Is this direct input into that system that bypasses all of these interim steps that we currently do?
It is, to answer your question, yes, it's a fully integrated system where the utility bill will become a receivable, and when it's paid, it, you know, it kind of flows to the general ledger, and it flows into what eventually you turn into your financial reports. That's the idea. Amelia, could you scroll up a little bit to that big paragraph John mentioned? So if you just look at all that, right in the middle, it says Estiva frequently breaks. You know, Estiva has been around for a long time with the district, and clunky or not, it is one of our key ways for managing internal control and separation of duties. And Great Plains is not a software that works too friendly with trying to have a separation of duties from where people are getting quotes to buy things and entering purchase orders or requisitions. The requisition gets approved by a manager, it goes through accounting, and then becomes a purchase order. And that gives you the levels of internal control that are acceptable. If you don't utilize the Estiva system, somehow your internal control processes are compromised. And I would let Vanessa Burke, if she wants to, jump in on this part. But so to answer your first question, John, we got to get our accounts in order, our processes in order as they exist today, with training new staff or training existing staff how to use things properly. And that puts us in a place where we can start mapping out where we're going to actually have our chart of accounts cleaned up well enough to start doing the financials. The very first part of the Tyler Encode system that we're trying to focus on right now is the utility billing side of module, because our utility billing module kind of stands alone all by itself. Its connectivity to Great Plains is a spreadsheet that I think either gets hand keyed in or uploaded and then tweaked a little bit. And our frontward facing utility billing system is just, it's not acceptable. It's wrought with mistakes. It's wrought with old data that was not cleaned up until we found some stuff recently. And so that's, to answer your question, we want to go forward with the utility billing part of Tyler Technologies. And then in that amount of time, we should be able to have our chart of account cleaned up and our processes as they're designed to be being used. And then we can, of course, convert to the new system. But we got to maintain internal controls throughout the process.
So let me ask you this, is as we continue to use the existing system, Estiva, is that, I understand why it's critical we continue to use it, but once you have done the Estiva input, are you in a position at that point in time to generate a check to pay a bill?
Yes, if it's done correctly, if the steps are followed, yes, and it works smoothly if the steps are followed, but there's more than one step. So it's, without proper training, people tend to get confused and not follow through with all the steps.
All right. So is that what's caused this? What actually, let me ask it a different way. What is it that's caused the existing payables backlog? I mean, we got people calling us up asking for money that we're not paying. I'm just wondering at this point, are we absent of personnel to do this payables function, or is it that we can't reconcile stuff that we're putting into Estiva? What's the problem in getting our vendors paid?
Well, it's a multitude: workload, staffing, turnover, and utilizing the systems as they're designed. And so I've asked Paula to go back to the original design of the Estiva upgrade, which was done in 2020, and recreate the processes and train on staff how to do it. We have one of our office technicians focused almost entirely on payables right now, and she's making some headway. And once she gets her stuff done, it kind of flows quicker. We bought a new printer that helps us print on blank checks versus printing on pre-printed checks. And that's made things better. And it is improving, but we are behind on some vendors. And it's absolutely related. The biggest issue is turnover.
So to follow on with that, and Vanessa can maybe address this as far as the scheduling is concerned, just sticking with payables for a minute, as we progress towards a conversion to this new system, how is it that we improve the existing payable system so that we can, you know, do business a little bit better than we've been doing it in the interim time that it takes to convert this? Does that question make sense? I'm talking about how do we live, you know, where would, you know, in a best guess estimate at this point, let's just stick again with payables. When do we do a payables conversion into a self-contained system that we're not jumping through three different processes? When does that happen?
Tom, do you want me to talk about that?
I'd like to jump in.
Yeah. Okay. Hi, everybody. So I think one of the things that is really important here is that the Tyler Encode system is what I would call an ERP system or an enterprise resource planning system. So it encompasses all of the applications. It's all integrated. So your AP, your capital, your payroll is in there, your billing and your receivable is in there. It's all part of one system. Great Plains was Dynamics, was originally built for private businesses. I'm not sure why the government picked it, though. You are an enterprise activity, so it isn't all that abnormal if you were a single fund enterprise fund. But you're not. You're a multi-fund, multi-function enterprise fund, different than what you would expect to see in Great Plains Dynamics. So that's kind of the fun. And I don't know why the system was selected. It was. It's what you're living with. And so what's happened is, and the other more important piece is that in government, budgetary controls drive the expenditure line. So for every line you're spending on or every group of lines, there is a budget control feature within most government systems that stops spending at that line level or at that group of line levels if you exceed that budget. And that control is in place as a trigger to say, you don't have enough money appropriated on that line, you cannot overspend it. Well, in Great Plains, it isn't integrated like that. The budget function is not integrated to stop spending at the line level. So you have all of these other secondary systems to put in place the budgetary controls, internal control system, in order to stop spending at the line level, meaning you need to requisition the item, you need a purchase order for the item, you need an invoice match to those two things. And then when it says, okay, you've got a purchase order and a requisition let, then go ahead and spend it, right? In your current environment where you have gone for months without a budget versus actual report, eliminating a software like this that does control spending at the line item level, I think would be disastrous. Meaning we've got to figure out what's causing the hangup in processing payments, because I don't believe, Tom, you can tell me how many payments you process per month, but I don't think it's more than 100 to 200 payments a month, right?
That's correct.
So why can't we get 100 to 200 payments, or at least, you know, and you can group together invoices. So that's a payment of multiple invoices. Why can't we streamline that process in the meantime? Now, going forward, we have asked Tyler Technologies for a work plan in order to implement the new system. And I think collectively between Paula, Tom, myself, and their project manager, we agreed that this would not, because we don't have our arms around it yet, this would not be the best subsidiary system to implement first. We think that your utility billing is very tight. We think that the controls and the features that are in place for, and I call it bill to collect, the bill to collect process is pretty well laid out, that's probably the best system to implement first. Even though it's customer facing, we can run that system dual for a period of time with the existing system, roll that in together, and it will actually benefit your community, because they'll be able to see a more streamlined process on utility billing. So we're thinking utility billing goes first, and you have to plan these in stages, right? You still got to get the general ledger and the chart of accounts in the system up front. So there's planning on that has to happen, so that when you do go live with these subsidiary systems, it can post through to that general ledger. So I don't know if that makes sense to everyone on the call.
Vanessa, it makes complete sense to me. And I think we had previously agreed that utility billing was a preferential place to start, mainly because it allows us to, you know, discontinue the embarrassment on a monthly basis we have that we run out of utility billing. And we have some obvious mistake, and then spend the next month correcting it and contacting people. So that's, I get that part. The other part that you mentioned at the end. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but I think somebody's unmuted at the bottom.
Oh, there we go. Okay. The other part that you came to at the end that I thought we had a preliminary discussion on, and I think is important to focus on is the general ledger and the chart of accounts, which I know from past experience has been a mess for a long time, complicated. There are, you know, I don't know what the number is, but, you know, like you said, for a company that's essentially running out 200 checks a month and doing a payroll for 55 to 60 people, you know, it seems like it gets very, very complicated for something that is not, at least in the private sector, you know, a very complicated thing to do. What I'd really like to see up front is some kind of a real pushing on the GL and the chart of accounts to get that established and get it typed onto a piece of paper, so that when it comes time to implement it in the new system, it's ready to go. I don't know how involved or how complicated that gets. Maybe we take somebody else's template and use it. But do you think that's possible?
In our discussion with the project manager for Great Plains, we decided that what we would be doing is, while they're working on the conversion of the utility billing data, and there are a lot of decision points in that, meaning, you know, how much history, customer history do you pull over? Do you just pull over the account balance? Will we be able to maintain a license of the old system to be able to access that data, or a SQL database? And so there's a lot of steps that go into that project plan, but we built that timeline out with them, and we do have that in kind of a Gantt chart now. I pressed for the Gantt chart. I'd like to get all the components into the Gantt chart, ideally, so that we have the general ledger chart of account mapping, what I would call a mapping exercise to the old system, GL account codes to the new, whatever we decide that's going to look like. And I do agree in the simplification process, and I can address that in a moment. But what we want to do is we want to kind of run those on a parallel track. so that while they're working on and our team is working on the development of the utility billing side, we're working on the general ledger account code structure size, going back to even the basics of the state controller's office has a recommended chart of accounts. I don't know, yours never matched that when I was here several years ago. And I wasn't sure why they kind of, you're allowed to go off course, but my question is, why do you go off course? Why do you do something different than what the SCO is recommending, right? And so we want to go back and look at that guide and make sure that we've got it in alignment with what the state wants for their financial transaction reports. That's number one. Because that's an external reporting function that you have. And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done on that at the same time. And then when we push the button to go live on the utility billing in a test environment, so going live to push a billing through, we can see it post through to those accounts. Now, the question that you had about the complexity of the account code structure, that occurs because your Great Plains system, and it's written a little bit in this paragraph that Paula provided regarding pooled cash. And a lot of people don't have a sound understanding of pooled cash, but you can see the payable account she references of 000. Your system was designed to have 000 be your pooled cash account. It functioned as a fund. Most systems, that's the way it worked. Yours, however, your Great Plains system, different from a government design system, when a check is cut in a fund, it's supposed to have a dual entry to the pooled cash account. Great Plains does not do that for you. So you had all these manual machinations that had to occur to ensure that when any time a check was cut in fund 200 or 250 or 500, that a corresponding manual entry was done in pooled cash, if that makes sense. Now in Tyler, in code, pooled cash is built into the software. It was developed for government. So when a check is cut, just like in a normal private business, you're going to cut that check, it's going to write it, it's going to automatically do a pooled cash entry for you. You don't have to think about it. It just happens and pooled cash stays reconciled. And then you just reconcile your pooled cash to your bank. I don't know. I know that's a lot to take in, but.
No, it is a lot, but I get it. I understand it. And I think we're on the same page. Let me ask you something. In the second module that in my head appeared that it might be opportune to use to do the testing. Tom, what do we do anymore? Who do we use? Paychecks?
I know where you're going, John, and I agree with you. I think after we do utility billing, and that seems to be rolling along nicely, we should then focus on payroll.
So, Vanessa, yeah, because part of that in the chart of accounts and how you would break down a bulk payroll entry, how sophisticated does that get or need to get as it relates to just tracking, tracking employee work and where they belong in what department? Are they a utility worker, an admin worker, or something? Is that something that we could dump in there on the front end as well, being that we get I'm thinking that this new thing we're buying is going to take a direct download from paychecks, will it not?
It should, yes.
Yeah, that's because
and we do that now today. We do a direct download from paychecks and basically upload that into the new system.
Yeah, but so
I mean, it's the Great Plains.
Yeah, I was going to say I wasn't even aware it could do that.
Doing that today.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so we don't really have a lot of problems there.
Yeah, it would be really a matter of refining the chart of accounts to where you would distribute that individual payroll on a biweekly basis or however we do it. And so, if it's not overwhelming, if we could target those two modules. I know we've got Tom, how much time now are we have an employee at the moment that is you know, the vice president of payroll, right? I mean,
yeah.
Is how much time is that absorbing?
And for how Tawanda, much?
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I missed you.
I think payroll is about a 4-day, sometimes 5-day process. That there's holidays thrown in there and a lot of overtime and different things happened. But Tawanda has taken to it quite well. She brings a lot of maturity to the process of payroll, which we're real happy with. And she's accepted a position to begin with the district full time on the 10th of this month.
Okay, well, that's good news.
She's a good addition, and she's solid, I think. I think hopefully she doesn't mind the drive. It's not too bad for her.
So let me understand. Let me understand, and I don't want to belabor this too much, but I'm really trying to get my head around the big picture here. That if we're taking it direct download from Paychecks to Great Plains at this point in time, what I understand what her front end responsibilities would be, because, you know, Marlene and I did them for 30 years. What does she do? I mean, if we're taking that direct download into Paychecks on the back end, I understand all the front end stuff about who worked overtime and who took a sick day and all that other stuff that goes on with the Paychecks coordinator. But what is, after that download is done, what is it that we have to do?
Well, she has to file her, you know, she has to clean up her office, file reports, put them in folders or such, and electronically or manual that she has. Then the other thing we have her doing is cleaning up our payroll files. You're supposed to keep payroll files on hand, you know, the jackets themselves for a long time. We're trying to get most of that scanned in. And general onboarding, addressing people's status change if they want to change their insurance because of a life type event that allows you to do so. Right now she's working on open enrollment. Just payroll stuff. I don't know if her job is smooth and we're using Tyler Encode for payroll and everything's working fine. You know, it might not be a 40-hour a week job. It might be 30 hours a week.
So okay, well, yeah, you're answering my question. Yeah, I'm not questioning the front end payroll employee type actions that we continually have to make with 60 people. I understand those. I was just trying to get an idea that by using this as a test, and then, you know, confirming that it's working well, that at the point we turn this thing on, that we're actually realizing at least some personnel gain from the result of the process.
And so, John, I just wanted to add on that. I think what I understood is that you would migrate away from Paychecks. Is that right, Tom? Going forward.
Yeah, the Tyler Encode bought a software called ExecuTime, and that's what they implement for their timekeeping and payroll now.
Which would increase that workload for that person pretty substantially. So even though, let's say it was all cleaned up right now and 4 days it took to process payroll plus or minus some hours during the month for maintenance, when you move to Tyler Encode and ExecuTime, all of that processing time is going to be brought back in-house.
Yeah,
that was a decision that was made.
Yeah, you're going to pick up all of the back-end deposit and tax stuff that, you know, I don't know how we work it through Paychecks now, but they normally would accept the responsibility for giving you precise information as to, you know, what you have to send to the feds and what you have to send to the government. So I get that there would be more work associated with that. As long as you guys think that's the best way to go, then that's fine. I mean, I'm just trying to get where we are here. Okay.
And to be clear, getting started with utility billing is going to put ourselves pointed in the right direction. And then sometime after, when it makes sense, if it still makes sense, start working on the payroll module. And of course, some of these things can be done simultaneously because they're different people and they're different project people with Tyler. We end up with a project manager, but they will, you know, every time a new module is being implemented, you'll go to their specialist. So we're working with the specialist right now on utility billing. Once we feel we've got good momentum there, maybe it's a good opportunity and Tawanda's a little bit more accustomed to the job and it's smoother for her a few months later to initiate the payroll system. And then hopefully by then we can have our chart of accounts cleaned up. We can have our audits behind us and we can really put ourselves in position to put in the general ledger balance sheet type functions of Kyler, which is really where the muscle is. Built in internal controls and good training programs. And, you know, we're also not customizing things. We're also not, you know, our Great Plains reporting process has 12 versions of each budget to monthly actual report that have been fiddled with over the past 10 years, 8 years. With Tyler, it's software as a service. It's in the internet. It's on the web. We do what they say. We're a small special district with a lot of stuff going on. But if we just do what they say, they have training available. They have resources available if they need to come on site, but everything is mostly done online. We can send staff to conferences where they kind of see where the innovation is coming and maybe make things run better. Particularly, this is why I want to do utility billing first, because as John Sullivan's going to say, we've got some issues with how we manage our accounts when properties are converted into multiple properties, and how do we bill it correctly in the middle of the month, and do we stop billing for this one? Remember that refund we had to give Bob Kyle a couple of years ago? That was all because our utility billing process was not followed. And when two properties grew into one, we kept billing for the little property, and then Bob bought it and he got a refund for that. So I think we're on the right path here. I think utility billing is the right way to go to begin with, and then we'll go from there.
Can you give me just, Vanessa, can you just give me an update on, from a receivable standpoint and a reconciliation standpoint, what you've seen and where you think we are?
Currently?
Yeah.
So bills are going out. Obviously, there's probably... you all are receiving your bills. So we know that bills are getting processed. We know payments are coming in from multiple sources. I did look at the month of July, and I'm trying to reconcile what the Platinum system is showing as payments against what the bank account shows as payments and credits, those kinds of things that happen, or NSF checks. I was off when I looked at July, I was off by about $6,500. And I know that's not a big number in the big scheme of things, but it's our materiality level internally should be a lot less than an audit. And so I've asked staff to hunt down why there's a $6,500 difference. But absent that, I think that information is readily available now to be posted into the general ledger. Again, that utility billing process comes from Platinum, which isn't mentioned in the staff report, but that's a whole nother subsidiary system that you're using to manage that process outside of Great Plains that then has an integration back into Great Plains. My team walked through the whole process with Tom. I know Tom said, you know, how come you have to know the whole thing start to finish? And really it helped us to get an understanding of that whole process start to finish and make me feel comfortable that you were ready to start the process of looking at Tyler Encode for implementing. And so really understanding, you know, the meter read guy, when does he go out? How often does he go out, et cetera? How does that happen when a read doesn't come back in right? We've learned that in more detail than we had several years ago when we were here just cleaning up the books.
Okay. So as part of this, I guess we're still on the basic update. Can you give us kind of, Vanessa, just give us at this point an overview from when you guys started to where you are now and what you've done, what people are in place, and more specifically, you know, and without, you know, any dusting up of what you found. I'd really like to understand at this point where you think we are. I guess you can tie that in to both what we've just discussed, and then maybe we can just move into the audit and what you see and where we are and what it looks like the schedule might be.
Clearly there's a backlog of transaction processing that is occurring first and foremost because of staff turnover. And obviously every time you bring in a new temp, they have to be trained. They can't just be let loose in the system. You have some good people like Tawanda running payroll. I think that is now operating effectively. You've got a turnover in utility billing. So obviously that's painful, but that's probably the most shored up system. You've got another person, a temp that's come in to run that. You have a temp, Chris, who is working on reconciling and getting payroll postings caught up to date. I've worked with him. He's pretty solid. He understands the allocation process and the entries needed to do that. So again, I think Paula's had turnover in her team. She's had to get that caught back up. There was back because of that training that has to happen, and you're operating so leanly in administration. When you lose somebody, it hurts. I'd like to see one day that you get to where when a person leaves, another person is already cross-trained. So you could flip them into that position. That just hasn't happened yet. So you end up feeling a lot of pain when a person departs from the organization. And that shouldn't happen. You just haven't gotten that far along in your maturity and your financial reporting to be able to do it. I would say your maturity level is pretty low on the internal control and on the financial reporting aspects. For even an agency that's as old as you are, you would not expect that. You would expect you to be much further along on the maturity scale. The monthly close process involves all of these systems that we're talking about. And so in order to get your financials up to date, you've got to really nail down those processes, start to finish, cradle, I call it cradle to grave, know every step along the way, and then how it feeds into the financial reporting system. Each of those transactions feeds certain accounts, and that mapping has not been done. So there's a lot of loss of information and institutional knowledge when a person leaves. It's pretty much just a on-the-job training. However, I know Tom walked me through the utility billing manual. That's really nicely laid out. It's very clear all the way through the billing process and then to the end. I don't know that that exists for the payroll and the AP process and the financial reporting process. So we'd like to see that expanded, probably better organized, et cetera. So where are you at in terms of closing the books? So 2021 audit has been, documents have been submitted. Our team, I have a team of people assigned to review the 2021 documents. We ran into problems with the data that was submitted to the auditor. And so we've had to pull back a little bit and spend more time on the cash accounts in order to ensure that it's accurate information that we're giving them, and including the trial balance that was originally provided. So we've been provided a revised trial balance that we're working from now, and we're looking at how all of the underlying documents support that trial balance for the 21 audit. And so I have a staff person and myself assigned to do that. I have another staff person assigned to build the budget versus actual reports. Obviously, the data is not fed up into that yet because we're going to get a revised one once we get all these postings in there. So if I was to show it to you today, which I could, it would have gaps. It would have gaps in the utility billing. it would have gaps in payroll for August because not all of August had been posted, but I know Chris was working on August. And then I think the third thing is you're not accruing your accounts payable monthly. And that has not been a practice in the past. So when you have lags in processing like you've had where you're behind paying your vendors for 2 to 3 months, you're going to look like July and August was just a bang up month because your costs aren't in there unless they were accrued. Now, do we change that process and accrue those back to July and August, or do we just do projections and likely we'll just do a projection and not change the cash basis payment method that has been in play for a number of months? We need a little bit more time with July and August, and we need, that's a decision point that we'll have to make with Tom and Paula when she gets back from PTO, because that would take a level of effort. We could post a journal entry to accrue it and then reverse it in August, post in August and then reverse it in September. So those are things I'm working through just to be able to deliver the July and August financial information potentially to the board meeting.
Well, that would certainly be nice to have, but when you start talking about cash versus accrual as a long-term policy, I don't particularly want to go there.
To accrual basis, right?
Oh, yeah.
No, I agree.
That's just a train wreck looking for a place to happen.
In government, especially, I think you had done it in the past as an organization. It is a nice to have, but if you have a skilled finance director or somebody that can explain, and if you can get your processing caught up to date, it won't matter, right? Because you process your payments monthly and it doesn't skew the information as much as processing 3 months and 1 month. And so you won't have skewed data and you'll be able to analytically look at it and see that it makes sense on a month over month basis.
Yeah, I agree. So, you know, and you know, we've been asking this question for so long, the 2020-2021 audit, where are we in terms of time to send that off and get it approved?
Yeah, I think Tom is that in the staff report? I thought, did we give a little update on that?
I thought we did.
Audit update right there. Yeah. So,
I think I saw that. I was just kind of looking for, you know, where are we date wise?
So I haven't blessed what has been given. And I think you guys kind of put me in as a stopgap between finance and the auditor. So I have not yet blessed the numbers is what I would call it. And said, yep, good to go. Go ahead and do your audit. Because I've had problems with the cash and the opening balances on the trial balance. So the opening balances on the trial balance, for whatever reason, when you guys push the button to roll forward from 2020 to 2021, you did not reconcile 2020 back to the last audit. So entries were not made in 2020 to reconcile back to the audit. So that means the opening balances in 2021 were not accurate. So I'm having to look back at the fund balance to make sure that it's okay. Well, it's across the board and multiple accounts that's happened. Now they can fix that process by coding it into the current year, which is what I believe your team has done, is coded the corrections of that in the current year, but to isolate those individual entries and get it mapped back to the prior year is what I'm expecting to see. So I know I've got a pending meeting with one of the retired annuitants that Tom brought in. She's tried to reconcile that and made an attempt to reconcile it. And we're looking at that work now.
Okay.
So, my goal was you would be ready by the middle of October. I think in talking with Richardson, they're in the middle of their busy season right now. We are too. So all the government audits that are on track to be audited for June 30th, 22 are going on right now. They've just started for the enterprise type water districts, et cetera. And then they go through the end of the calendar year. It takes about 6 months to get through busy season with government audits. So Richardson's in the heat of that. So you're following kind of that same trajectory. Do I think we can be ready by the middle of October? I'd like that. It's probably going to be closer to the end of October, but Richardson, I don't think, can get back out here until November anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Just so we're clear publicly on where we are and where we're trying to go. Can I ask, how did this get by Larry Bain? How did those inconsistencies get approved in an audit that established the problem for the audit that came after it?
So Larry was the auditor when I was there the last time. And I believe that was 2019. 2019 was fine. I had Richardson give me their audit entries that Larry Bain had posted for 2019 and any prior period adjustments. There were no issues at 2019. We had come in and helped get you ready for that audit and cleaned up that data way back when with Larry Bain. He had a good handle on the allocations and the pooled cash accounting way back when for years. He'd been your auditor for years and probably helped have conversations on how to do that accounting and had a good understanding of it. Richardson does as well. There were just a lot of internal entries. It's matching back to that audit that has to happen first before you roll forward.
Right.
And that was not happening with your finance staff that you had in place after we left. Okay. And it's unfortunate that did not happen because that's kind of where you start, right? You start with the audit. The auditors have blessed the numbers. You rely on the audit to say it was a clean audit. You had a unmodified audit opinion for 2019. You had an unmodified audit opinion for 2020, which means there were no material errors in the financial information. And they're auditing to a level of materiality that's set by standards, right? And through their technical guidance. And so there were no material errors. That doesn't mean that errors couldn't be occurring that were immaterial. They would have had to have reported those to you if they were above a trivial amount. And my understanding is they did do a lot of correcting entries in the 2020 audit. In looking at the entries that Richardson made, there were about 47 journal entries that were posted, and about half of those were client-driven, meaning you identified the error before the auditor, and about half of those were the auditor found the error.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So
we got to fix the error process. We got to fix the processes so there are no errors.
And clearly, I guess we have to be current in the existing audit before we can make the entries that would allow us to proceed live with the new system, correct?
Very much so.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have a whole nother year to audit, right? We have 21, 22.
Yeah, that was my point. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so we haven't even rolled, 20 to 21 roll did not occur accurately. The 21 to 22 roll needs to have all the audit entries in there. You know, I'm saying your go live would probably be sometime, you know, ideally your go live on a system would be at the beginning of the fiscal year, which would be July 1. So it's right. Not like we're going to go live on January 1.
I have one last question for you that's somewhat mechanical. As it relates to utility billing and then rolls forward, is there a reason that in this conversion, we don't go from a first of the month through 31st of the month versus, you know, getting bills that go out from the 23rd to the 22nd of the following month, et cetera, et cetera? Is there any reason to not get on a schedule inside the entire organization that everybody understands we're working from the first to the 31st?
like on it's everything. The 31st and build on the 5th or whatever. Yeah, no, there's no, I don't think this system would prevent you from doing that. You'll be able to set up multiple billing cycles as needed. You would have, you're going to have that period of accrual that'll change at the end of the year to play catch up for that transition. But that would be something we could contemplate in the implementation of the system if that's desired by the community.
Okay. I don't know if it's desired by them, but as you have continuing discussions about all of this stuff, I mean, it just makes it more clear cut as to what we're talking about if we're talking about a calendar month, you know, in yeah. all cases.
Okay. Yeah, and this is Tom. We've talked about that as part of this conversion. I don't know the reason to bill on the 25th or not, but there's certainly a lot of reason to start fresh on the 1st of every month.
Yeah. You know, it in my own head, just looking at my utility bill, I mean, it, you know, obviously, if you want to compare month to month, you can do it by holding one bill in your left hand and one bill in your right hand. But it just makes it easier, I think, overall, from the layman's perspective, to talk about everything on a calendarized month from the 1st to the 31st. So,
and a lot of the bill is flat fee anyway. So you're really only talking about the meter read process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Can I get back to Vanessa's update on the 2021 audit?
Sure.
I heard all the issues that we were having to deal with. I didn't hear what our expected target date for completion is.
We're looking, Martin, we're looking at my discussion with Richardson is that your trajectory for 21 is following the same trajectory as 22 audits going on right now. So a normal audit cycle for a June 30, 22 audit today would be finish and wrap up by 12/31 of 22. So you're just a year behind that. It means that your 6/30/21 will try to finalize and get done by the end of the year, 12/31/22. We're going to move right from that right into 21-22 audit to try to get you caught up so that the 22-23 audit can be on a normal cycle. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so we're targeting the end of the calendar year.
Calendar year. Yep.
Okay.
Marty, do you have anything else? I apologize for not.
No, I'm in agreement with what Vanessa is proposing with regard to Tyler. That seems reasonable. I suppose we've got to find some people to take care of some of these tasks that we don't have people for yet, huh?
Yeah, there was one question I had with that, in that Paula mentioned in a report that the vice president of cutoffs matching, it was the vice, you know, the person that does all these three-way matchings, we're going to hire in the next 2 weeks. Does that mean that we have a body currently under consideration? I mean, we actually have a reasonable chance of hiring that individual, Tom, or is that just a hope?
Well, at this, I'm going to look and see where Amelia, can you go down to recruitment, please? So right now we've been recruiting for the accounting technician positions, and we've hired one, Tawanda, and then Paula's anticipating interviewing the accounts payable and the accounts receivable over the next week or two. I know she's got a number of applications in, but the utility billing position is probably the next one on the docket. And I've heard we have good applications. Maybe things are starting to change a little bit.
Okay. All righty. Where are we? Do we need to go back up to the top, Amelia?
No, we got to get through. She needs to go down.
Okay.
So utility billing, there's a couple things going on with utility billing. And John, if you want to jump in front of me and talk about the shopping center issue, you're welcome to, or I can just get through mine and you can have what you need to say after that. What do you want to do?
I would appreciate just having the committee be aware of that particular account, account number 5000800. And I'm sure you can explain to the committee what that account is and what we discovered and what we need to see happen. I'm just trying to get a date, Tom, out of when that will be.
It's agreed to. It would have been yesterday had we not had so much turnover, but it's on our radar, and we're part of what we're doing today is we're asking the committee in paragraph two what to do next. But Paula was able to pull a report out of our utility star system because she noticed somebody's trash bill was different than somebody else's. And so then we worked with our vendor to get some spreadsheets that are a lot easier to follow with your eyes as you're comparing numbers. And she discovered there are 92 people who were being charged incorrectly for their trash and security and drainage. And the reason was, is because when these properties change hand, there's a little dance that takes place between the realtors and the title company and the district and the individuals buying the homes. And out of 92 events, you know, probably there's 35 different scenarios. And so unless your person who does utility billing is trained correctly and understands how these different things work, they make mistakes. And in this case, mistakes have been being made for a long time. In addition to the move in, move out process, there's also accounts such as Murrieta Gardens, which is the big triangle where the developer John Sullivan eventually put in the Bel Air and the Taco Bell and so on and so forth. And so when he starts to subdivide these properties, he comes to us and tells us, and we're supposed to go into our system and create new accounts from this old big account. And sometimes, as with the case with Bob Kyle, or the property that he ended up buying in 2003, when they did that exchange, 3 or 6, one account was created, was larger, but the little account that disappeared didn't disappear in our billing system. Oddly enough, it's still incorrectly reported on the county map as well. So John's come across an account, I believe it's currently, it's the old Murrieta Gardens account that we've been billing him for since the time we first started subdividing that property. It could go back as far as when the hotel was built. My guess is it's a little more current than that. And we've been talking about auditing commercial accounts for quite some time, and we would run across this if we were to do that correctly. You just need to make sure every parcel is getting a bill. And it takes somebody to just sit down and do it, and amongst all our other priorities. And since we lost our utility biller, it just hasn't gotten done. But now, as time moves forward, it becomes a higher priority. And we are getting some things done. The direction the Poon Group has taken us takes a kind of a load off of our minds, is that you know, we have this elephant in the room that we don't know how to deal with. And it allows us to do some more of our business process review stuff. And this is clearly one of those accounts. If it turns out we've overbilled that commercial account, we're gonna have to give a refund. And that goes with the other commercial accounts. And then there's some issues with the ordinance that allows us to modify our billing as we go based upon buildings being added, buildings being converted to other types of businesses. And all that's in our code, and we need to have someone who's focused enough and understands the billing system to go through and fix that. That being said, John, does that kind of summarize it for you? John Sullivan?
Well, this is really difficult because this problem dates back from our records back to when we bought the property in 2012. And the amount of money that we've been double billed is approaching $50,000. It's not an insignificant sum. you know, and so that makes me concerned because it's been 3 months since I brought it to Paula's attention. I was told that within a week or so I'd get an answer, and I don't even have a corresponding number from the district as of this point. I don't want to belabor it or spend any more time on it, but I have another meeting that I need to go to, and I want to make sure that item number 5 gets appropriately handled. And but I'm going to have to leave the meeting, and I just, you know, that along with the Coastland dispute and the dispute on all the other items that we routinely send in because they're not accurate. I'm hoping that this whole process fixes this, and there needs to be more transparency, because since 2020, apparently we haven't even gone back and adjusted the journal entries from that audit accurately. And so we don't even have a 2021 starting date. So it's just it's frustrating, you know, being an old board member. I just pull my hair out, and it's got to get made right. The financial reporting is the backbone of the district to make sure we know where we're going, and we're really in bad shape. And, you know, I don't want to beat anybody up further, but some of these things should have been resolved a long time ago. Thank you.
Tom, maybe, you know, when you look at this master account, that's the problem, this 5,800 number. That has obviously from a large chunk of property that John bought morphed into property that was changed or deeded over or given to somebody else, or somebody else is now sitting on. How far does that break down? How many... From that existing number, do we know now how many different accounts are impacted, some of which were probably double billed? And I don't know the answer to this, but were some of them not billed at all? What's going on there?
If I give you an answer and I'm wrong, I'll be giving you the wrong answer. But I can only speculate, John, if John Sullivan thinks it goes back to when they bought the property in 2012. It could be the entire Murrieta Gardens property, which was, I think, 54 acres. And then the number of accounts are the 78 homes and the probably 20 businesses, including the hotel, the Bel Air, and all those other businesses. So until we get into the details of looking at all the commercial accounts, looking at a parcel map, making sure that each parcel has an account, and then we look at the accounts that are lingering behind, and maybe this is one of them. It could be that this account that used to be the broad entire project is just now the Bel Air. I don't think that's the case. So we're gonna get on it. I mean, obviously Paul's made some progress with identifying the trash bills, and the second paragraph of what you're looking at is our question. And we may have to go back and forth with the district's attorney. But in the past, when it came to security fees, the refund that we gave to Mr. Kyle after Dick Shanahan reviewed it, we gave Mr. Kyle a refund that went back 4 years. And that was a legal precedent that I think it stood up. And so for these folks who've had the wrong trash bill for however long since they moved in, do we go back 4 years and do we collect the money that's owed to the district, or does the committee or the board want us to waive the fees in the interest of positive outcomes for the clients and not necessarily the district? Or do we say, hey, you used the trash can, you have to pay for it. You know, we made a mistake. We're owning up to our mistake, but we're still the government. And if you owe money to the government, you owe money until you pay it. So I kind of want to get a feel from the committee as to how you want us to treat these past due accounts, both in the form of charges that where we didn't charge enough, or refunds where we overcharged. Do you want us to go 4 years? Do you want us to go get Dick Shanahan to dust off what he did a couple of years ago and formalize it into, we bring it to the board as sort of a formal agreement, and then we can go from there? Because that's, it's kind of a question we need answered. I mean, we can fix all the accounts, and we're doing that. If you have a commercial property, you pay your security fees based upon a formula that was established by the engineering study done in probably 97 for square footage. And whatever type of business you are, you pay this much per square footage. If you're undeveloped land, it's per acre. These are all the things that were passed when Measure J came around. And so if we're going to adhere to those rules, you want us to go back 4 years with refunds and bills, or do you want us to do that? And if you want us to think about it, I'll talk to Dick, and we'll see what kind of, Dick or Andrew, we'll see what kind of response they will give us, so we have a real solid legal foothold on what we're going to be doing.
Well, Tom, I need Marty's opinion on this as well, but this is a board conversation. It can't be two people, offering one perspective. There's three more out there that really need to comment on this. And it's from where I come from, I don't know the answer. I think it needs to be a lot more broader and more sophisticated conversation. I mean, I operated in a retail industry where there were 30,000 people doing what I do. And there was a year that I was out of 30,000, I was selected the best in the United States. And I did that because of the way I treated my customers. My customers were not the government. And I don't know how I really feel about it. Go knocking on somebody's door and saying, we made a really bad error 5 years ago or 4 years ago, and now we're going to slap you over the forehead about it because you didn't pay your bill. And it pretty much comes down to that. I mean, before you make that decision, I think we need to know, first of all, what the exposure is, what kind of money are we really talking about? And secondly, you have to have a conversation about, hey, if they owe us $25, are we going to chase the $25 and spend $100 in the process? Realistically, there's got to be maybe some parameters or some formula that we're going to adhere to. Marty, what do you think?
I had the same concerns about this. Because I think we need to know, for instance, out of these 92 residents that were billed incorrectly, what does that really amount to? Is if you, especially the people we overbilled, I think that's a different story than the people we underbilled.
And yeah, I agree with that too.
And the underbilling, if it's peanuts, let's get on with our life and waive it. We got to know what the magnitude is. If we're chasing somebody who didn't get billed for the last 4 years for a trash can, and it turns out to be $50, I don't know if it's worth it.
I don't have the list in front of me. I don't know how sophisticated Paula's work has been so far on this, but I do believe there's a handful of accounts that are over $1,000, which is why we want to get a little bit of direction.
Yeah, well, I think it needs to go to the board.
Okay.
And we need to know at least some magnitude of what's going on. I mean, if there's five people that out of 92 that owes us more than 1,000, the rest of them probably are peanuts.
Okay.
And the peanuts need to be just wiped out.
Let me see if we can put something together by the board meeting that, without naming names or giving addresses, kind of gives accounts and says, here's how much they owe, here's how much we overpaid, and put that on a spreadsheet with a, you know, quick memo to follow up on this from Paula. And then we'll go from there. And we won't reach out to Dick Shanahan yet or Andrew. We'll just do our own staff work first, and then we'll come to the board with the discussion.
Well, part of that, go ahead, Marty, go ahead.
I would take it that the commercial accounts are substantially different than the residential accounts.
Correct.
Because we might have to do more homework on the commercial accounts, right?
Correct, because some businesses have a multitude of business types within their property.
Yeah. So I don't know, maybe you deal with the residential first and then deal with
I mean, Marty's right. You know, when you get, and I don't know, like in John's case with his specific account number, you know, I'd really like to understand that umbrella, starting with that account we know about that John told us was a problem, and understanding what individually inside that account all the ramifications are. Because when you get into commercial leasing and common area maintenance, if you're overbilling or underbilling in those situations, you know, a lot of that is passed through as a CAM that the guy paying a lease on a retail space is giving to the landlord on a monthly basis. So we may be creating some real problem at that level that we need to understand as well. So that's kind of like Marty said, that's kind of separate from somebody that we just missed their trash can. So as much of that as you folks can explain to us, if we're going to have this discussion philosophically on what we want to do, you know, would be appreciated. I mean, the more information we can understand, the better we're going to be.
Okay, well, I'll talk to Paula when she returns from vacation, ask her to get into the details a lot more greater detail, and then to come up with a recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to need, you know, Marty, I think we need from you guys, we need some kind of a presentation to show us, you know, where we are here.
Okay. Understood.
Okay.
What's next down on here?
I have no idea. Go back to the top. We've been.
Was that the end of the finance report? Yes. Okay.
Okay.
So now we're just on agenda items. These are mostly discussion items.
Yeah. The next one, we're down to the treasury bond, buying the treasury bond. Is that item five? Is that where we are now? We're done with utility billing updates and we're done, of course, with the general update.
Correct.
Okay.
So the $540,000was part of the CFD 2014-1 Melrose bond that was taken out, voted on by the majority of John Sullivan's group, if not all of his group. And when the district was given the opportunity to administer this bond, we also oversaw the building of the water treatment plant. We project managed it. We ended up pulling, in my opinion, erroneously, the $540,000. Hang on, I gotta shut a door. So when we were managing this bond, we were supposed to have left the $540,000, which is for the fourth pump setup called a train at the water treatment plant. And we ended up taking that, all that money, we put it into our checking account, and we just paid bills along the way. And we kind of intermingled it with the rest of our district funds. And it's been identified a couple times that we need to take that out of our checking account and put it into a place where it's visible and earns a proper interest level. And so John Sullivan has requested that we take the money and we purchase a two-year treasury bond, which he believes is running at a really good interest rate and would be a better use of that money. And so I'm just taking it to the committee to be as transparent as possible what we do with this money, because it's going to be a hit to our checking account, but it's money we really never had in our, should have had in our checking account. So if we were to do this, we would add the interest rate we get from LAIF over the years to begin with. And then we would respond to the whole amount.
I remember uncovering this problem and then, you know, and again, I just want to check the work here to, we have been subsequently booking this in its own individual account. Is this inside the CFD or is this money now outside the CFD? Where is the money?
The cash is in El Dorado Savings, and we have three accounts there, payroll, checking, and savings. The 540 in cash is there.
Okay.
And then the interest that it would have earned amounts to, according to John, about $45,000. And I'm sure that he's done a spreadsheet, but we'll validate it. And so he wants that full amount moved into a treasury bond. We tried unsuccessfully. I don't know why they wouldn't do it, but we tried to get our bond agent, Wilmington Trust, the trustee who is the one responsible for collecting the funds and then doling it out to the bondholders. We tried to get them to take the money back and put it back into the account where it belonged, which is the acquisitions and construction account of the bond. And they wouldn't let us do it. They cited that the bond documents don't allow it, and I'm sure they're right. So in the meantime, this is the next alternative. I appreciate Mr. Sullivan bringing it forward. And it's probably long overdue that we put the money in a place where it's not intermingled with our cash.
So did we ever determine at the end of the reconciliation on the water treatment plant, the 2014 activity that we had, did we actually spend this money?
Yes.
So
you remember Michelle did a big old presentation.
That's kind of what I'm drawing back on. I know the first time we looked at this was probably like 2018 or something. Because, you know, we went through this whole rigmarole about how we had a 10% contingency and we were inside the $14 million and blah, 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 blah. And it turns out, as we started to research this, that maybe we had spent just a tiny bit more money on that water treatment plant than we thought we had.
If you don't mind, it was one of Darlene's final meetings, but she had come forward to the board with the summary of the cost overruns that were that happened in that water treatment plant build. And this was about March of 2017. You can actually listen to the audio, and Amelia knows exactly which one it is because she takes great notes and she remembers these things, I think. But there was about $850,000 of identified cost overruns to the project. And I believe Roebling Construction put together a big binder identifying all the tasks that were completed that were beyond the scope of the contract. And they took about $185,000 of those tasks, and they pulled them out from being a shared cost because it was strictly for the benefit of the district. While they were here, we asked them to do a lot of things that were like deferred maintenance and stuff that the district needed done, unrelated to the water treatment plant.
Right.
And then there were about $670,000, I believe, of cost overruns that were legitimate. And the agreement has that the agreement with the CFD 2014-1 or another site agreement, and I don't remember exactly today, that said the cost overruns were going to be shared equally between the district and the owners of the bond, the Rancho Marietta North properties. And so that meeting happened way back then, and really nothing's happened to it since. And I think these are part of getting our financial house in order. We need to get these things right. And if you think about Mr. Sullivan and what he's asking, there's kind of like, there's debits and there's credits. And one of these, this $300,000 cost overrun is one of the debits, or when you're owed money or owe money. And then the 540 belongs in the proper place. And then the amount that we need to negotiate on a refund from the coastland issue, that's another listing on the table. At some point we need to try and get this to a place where we know everything is clean, or we just pick them off one at a time and, and narrow the amount of times we have to talk about them.
Well, I don't see that course of action as particularly realistic, in that there is, you know, a mountain of disputed invoices that run across the entire spectrum of this development problem. And, you know, there needs to be a discussion and a global settlement of that, or we will be at this for years. We've already been at it for years. So, you know, maybe that gets put on next month's agenda and we figure out, are we pretty much ready with a reconciliation from our standpoint anyway, as to what the Rancher North really owes?
I can say mostly, but not precisely. I'm not ready to sit down and be grilled over this or that without having more backup, but I'm very comfortable with the 540 issue, and I'm pretty comfortable with sitting down for a Coastland refund, a refund on the development fees he paid for the gardens commercial development.
Well, again, I guess there's a place where we have that Coastland discussion, because, well, let's say it this way. We got a drainage report that we reviewed that was garbage. Coastland chose to review it. And as a result of it being what it was, it cost a lot of money to review it. I'm not comfortable at this point saying that was a CSD problem, because I'm not sure it is. That's a John Sullivan Coastland problem. Although I grant you it came through us, but ultimately it would have to go back to Coastland if, you know, were we not supposed to proceed on that? And again, I don't want to get into the weeds on this, but it's something you need to agendize for a discussion here with Marty and I, because, you know, I don't think that's our problem.
Okay.
Marty, you okay with any or all of this, or have anything?
Yeah, so I'm not clear about the direction on this $540,000. Are you saying that you're going to put something to the board to move this money from cash to a separate titled account? And no. then move it to the treasury bond? Is that what you're saying?
No, we would move it directly from our checking account to the treasury bond. I've never bought a treasury bond, so I don't really know the logistics of it all. But
treasury.gov. And I don't know. It's been a while since I've been in the weeds, but, you know, the interest rates, you know, have me looking again. I don't know incrementally, you know, what the spacing on years is, 1 year, 5 year, blah, blah, blah. But it's all there, and it's not fee-based and it's not tax-based. So, and it really, that 540, there was never, at least this, refresh my memory if I'm incorrect, there's no question that 540 belonged there. I mean, it was taken as a deposit against future construction to make sure that the money would be there. So it's his money, and it would be there as a deposit no matter what other reconciliations we did with Rancho North might end up as. So it is just a block of money that we're holding until the point in time where development requires us to spend it.
Correct. And we should not have pulled it out of Wilmington. We should have left it there.
So yeah.
That was, you know, it's my responsibility today. So I'm trying to fix it. And I'd like the committee to consider allowing us to go to the board in the 19th and propose that we purchase this treasury bond. We add the interest that it would have earned if it would have stayed at Wilmington. And we just mark this box off, because it's been a big issue for quite some time.
Marty?
I'm not quite sure that that we want to pay back interest, but I don't have any problem with going forward. But the is it obvious that the Treasury bond meets the investment guidelines for that we've published?
I don't know. I'm going to have to lay it out on paper with a spreadsheet and some numbers and a little bit of narrative and share it with the attorney. Okay. And make sure we can do this. I don't know. I've been at government agencies where they borrow large sums of money, but I don't recall seeing one where they purchased a treasury bond. Is Vanessa still on the line? Vanessa, is it common for government agencies to purchase treasury bonds as investment choices?
Yeah. So having been a treasurer before, yes, you can purchase a treasury bond, and you know they'll depending upon your maturity that you want. If you were to need that cash, the treasury bond, the only thing is you want to make sure if you had to mature it early, that you don't pay a penalty, right? And so that's one of the issues you may want to consider, and this is just a thought with interest rates going up, a CD in lieu of a treasury bond. And I remember the 540 when I was there before. I don't remember one, according to Martin. I have a question on whether it did require interest being paid. And if it did, then that should be credited at the life rate. But, and so that is appropriate. And then I think, depending upon that agreement, you want to keep it in something, depending upon when it's going to be utilized, that you don't pay a penalty for an early maturity on the bond. But yes, you can, as a government agency, within government code, California government code, you can purchase treasury bonds.
Okay.
And you know, Tom, there are, I can tell you that there are CDs, especially on a 1 year, there are CDs now at the 3.9 rate that you can book right off the internet with any number of banks.
And those don't pay a penalty.
Right. And if you back up on, if there is, and it's contractual to whatever we had with the water plant, which probably would have started around 2012. But at the time we would have booked that deposit and placed that out, I'm assuming it would have been at an interest rate that it would have been no higher than 1%. I mean, and the accrual on that has not been, it's been between 1% and 2% probably since that 2012 up until about 2019, where it started to, you know, minutely increase and then surged over the last year to where we're now starting to see bond rates at, you know, 3s and 4s. So, you know, do we owe 4% going back to the 212? Absolutely not. That's ridiculous. We don't owe that kind of money.
No, I think the life rate, and again, the treasury bond is what John Sullivan, who's ultimately the one who has to pay the bond back, it was his request. So that's why we chose to look at treasury bonds. If he wants to do something differently, but I think this is something that the board should approve, because I don't think this number needs to linger out there as questionable any longer.
Well, I'm in favor of moving it forward for a board discussion. Marty, you concur?
I did, yes.
Okay. All right, good. And I guess we're going back to you and Vanessa again here on the budget versus actual format.
Yeah, so Amelia, you're going to share your screen, or let Vanessa share her screen. And this, I don't want to dwell on this too much. I just want to give you an idea of what your eyes are going to see when we do have the right numbers to import into these budget worksheets and going forward. Because lately, we haven't had a lot of information.
So let's see, am I sharing the screen, Tom? Yeah,
I am. You should be able to share now, Vanessa.
And I'm trying. 1 second here.
Hi.
I'm moving my data around. Okay, so this data has not been vetted, but we are looking at, this is where you'll see, you know, some of the gaps, but essentially we're building out
this is, these are the high level summary tabs. I didn't put everything in this workbook, but we're building separate tabs for each of the fund types. Obviously, we need to know what your beginning fund balance is, and that'll be on each of the fund types. You can see in here, July, the revenue is blank, and that's very easy to spot in something like this when you do a percent of budget. Because it didn't get posted, but we would have a projection column that would equal the budget in the event that we transition. So depending upon whatever we load in here after we do the reconciliation, which we're working on, we will have a percent to the total budget, and then we'll have a projection to year end. Transfers out have not been posted. We know that. And then when you're looking at down here in the expenditure line, we have it by fund. We've got it split between salary, benefit, professional services, material supply, et cetera. You get a subtotal for each of the funds here. So we can get an overall picture of where you're at. But clearly in source of supply, you see, you know, some of this is blank for material and supply, and that's because the vendor payments had not been made. We see, but, you know, so it's very easy to check these numbers and see where you're at ultimately at the end of the day. So each of these will be split into their own tab behind the summary tab so that you can get a P&L for water, for wastewater. And then we've got wastewater split between admin, collection, transmission, delivery, and then any admin allocation as a separate line item. So that's what we're proposing to present. Here's your security budget. This doesn't have an allocation of labor. You can see in July, though, it's at 8,000. So again, we'll have a question because that's only at, you know, 6% of the year's budget. So, you know, what is going on here in that number? Same here, 7%, 8%. So ideally, and then August looks even more blank because less was posted for August than for July. So lots of big, and then you can see here like the Cal Waste contract that was not paid. So I was having a conversation with Paula. I'm like, why is this Cal Waste contract not paid? We don't have any expenditures. And then Cal Waste came in and said, hey, I need my payment. You know, so we have the months, it's about 75,000 a month. So we'll include that in the projection column as opposed to the actual column. And I think that will help on that cash to accrual analysis, where if we're behind on the posting, which we don't want to be, because this data is only as good as what is evident, we would at least have a projection for what that month should look like. Does that make sense?
Yes.
We don't change the accounting system. So I don't know if that's reasonable approach to the budget versus actual, but I'm kind of thinking that it is, right? So if she didn't post here, we would have a projection here regardless of having it posted here.
Yeah, as an interim step, yeah.
Yeah, just for the meantime until we get caught up. But I would tell you that I have a strong feeling that there should be no reason to be behind. It doesn't make sense to me that we're this far behind.
So, okay, refine that statement for me a little bit. Yeah, because it makes no sense to me either. but tell me what that means in terms of a time frame. So when we're, yeah, it makes no sense to be behind, so we won't be behind by fill in the blank. Okay,
or something. I feel like we have systems and processes in place that have served the district, maybe not perfectly, but have served the district. We just have to get the people in place that can make it happen. So really everything you look at is people, process, systems. And if any one of those is broken, then it causes delays in the financial reporting. So you've got to get those three nailed down. So we've got to get a person assigned that says you're doing utility. And we had a person in utility billing. We had a person billing. Why it didn't get posted to the general ledger is my question. And I know there's a cash payment process that has to happen. And then that has to get applied. And then the out export report has to happen, but who's not doing that? And why is that not happening? And so we have to make sure those key things that happen to feed this report are occurring every single day. And that's just the core function of finance. And absent being able to produce this report with reliable data, it's concerning, but we've got to shore up those processes and make it happen. I mean, it isn't a matter of why it isn't happening. It needs to just get done. And I can't be any more frank than that. There should be no excuse.
I agree.
What's the bottom of this? If you go to the very last line.
Very last line. Well, there's no revenue in here, but so in August, you spent $329 overall net annual activity. In July, you spent $440.
Mm-hmm.
It seems low to me, but that's low because you didn't process your AP.
Right.
Is this bottom line for all?
That's all activity. That's an all in.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you take, I'm doing this off the top of my head and I'll probably screw it up. If you take 440 times, you know, 12, we run a lot hotter than that.
That's not, so I mean, you can look at your burn rate. Is that your burn rate, which is a private industry term, but
yeah,
is that 10,881,106, right? Divided by 12, right?
That's your
monthly burn. Because I I'm looking at July because July has the full payroll in it. Even though it's not allocated, you would expect a monthly burn of around 900,000. So you're at half that clip. And that's mainly because the AP didn't get posted.
Right. Yeah.
AP didn't get posted.
That's like everybody does work for us for free is basically.
Yeah. Right. But that's because the accrual isn't there. So that was the issue, is how do we want to show that on this report? But, you know, ideally you got around 900,000 as your monthly burn rate. It doesn't take rocket science to figure out that things aren't posted. So, right. You know, and you can see these are the prior 2 years, right? So we built in both I think that was actual. Let me look. So this was unaudited actual for 2021, and this was the budget for 21-22. So you can see your trend is 9.9, 10.1, and 10.9, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very, very easy to see where you're at. This absolutely no way is right.
Right.
And so I wouldn't even present this, but this is how I want you to see your overall roll up to the grand total budget. And then have a tab for each one, because you get lost in the details you're going through each one of these, but who cares about the allocation? What does it cost you to serve your community? It costs you $10.9 million, around close to $1 million a month. Now you could get into the detail and say, okay, how much of that is security, right? Et cetera.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Marty, you know, I'm looking at this going, well, what can I say, being that right now I have nothing?
You can't make any decisions.
What you're telling me from this report, Vanessa, is if you on a monthly basis, once we get this thing rolling, mm-hmm. or Paula or both can take this at a board meeting and review it and explain it, I mean, we would have a really good idea of where we were.
Yeah,
An interim basis. I mean, you know, we're supposed to have the supercharged version of QuickBooks on a monthly basis to tell us where we are. But this looks like it works and can be explained to the five of us, so we get a good picture on a monthly basis.
Right. And I think even we're doing some preliminary analytic where, like, material and supply budget and collection was, you know, 2,500, and we've already spent it. So, you know, we can very easily set parameters and conditional formatting on the percentages to say, okay, which one needs analysis, because it's over or under a banded range, which is what you want to do, is say, okay, what's my band range of expectation for that month? So where does it fall out at the end of the day, and which ones need investigation because it's over or under? But again, remember, absent budgetary controls, it's very easy to overspend in a line item because we wouldn't have Estiva. If you didn't have Estiva controlling your requisition process, you know, these could go over that budget very quickly and right. go unnoticed. And that's why I'm saying don't eliminate Estiva today, because until this report and this format gets done. Now, this can be built inside Great Plains so that it could be a push of a button, and then internal administration is sending it to, for example, to Michael's team and saying, okay, why are we spending 25? Maybe that's a one-time material and supply purchase. And how much is it? And maybe that lasts for the whole year. So that's an acceptable expectation. So we're building this to make sure that it addresses kind of those parameters, and maybe meeting with the finance committee at a point in time to say, what should those parameters be, would be a good idea once we get this developed fully baked.
Yeah. Marty?
So is this spreadsheet intended for use in a whole bunch of future years, or is it going to get done differently when Tyler comes on?
We can have Tyler. We're going to redo the chart of accounts to the extent necessary if we need to. I mean, I think these buckets are reasonable, for example, to track, you know, administration, collection, transmission, delivery, et cetera. Whether or not those allocations are happening within the system or not will be part, the building out of Tyler, making sure that the cost allocations are getting done.
Well, and I'm assuming, you know, that when we turn the Tyler on, before we get there, if as extensive as they are, they have to have a whole can full of reporting tools and report writer tools in there that would, you know, we could pretty much design as we go what we would want to see, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. So, I mean, does it have a pretty good report writing function?
I would tell you personally that no system has a perfect report writing function. They come with canned reports.
Right.
But there's always some customization that needs to happen. And that's where things get broken. We did have the discussion with the project manager for Tyler that we needed to have an inventory done of reports that, and I know this sounds funny because you haven't been getting reports, but reports that are currently in use by the district needs to be inventory and catalog so that when we do push the go live button, we don't lose critical data that's used for operations. Yeah. That has not been done yet. And it's funny to say that because you haven't received a budget versus actual report, but there may be a number or a myriad of reports that are being run by department staff that we need to have a good handle on so that we don't break that if it's necessary and critical. Now, there's probably a lot of reports that get run that you don't even use, and those are okay to go away, but yeah.
So is there like in Michael's case in operations, does after we turn this on, does Michael's team get access to this system and the ability to do that or customize that or print these off by themselves? Is this strictly something that stays inside the finance and administration area, or is this something that other areas of the district can draw on?
And Tom, that's a licensing question for you, because I don't know your licensing arrangement. But I do believe you also own SharePoint. So in some cases, when you have a licensing issue for access to the financial system, there are data warehouses or places to house information so that the department staff can access it. So I don't know, Tom, if you can address that.
The expectation is that staff all have access to the data. It can be at the line item in a spreadsheet, or maybe they have a login to Tyler. Clearly, the staff are going to need to be entering purchase requisitions in the Tyler software. So I'm pretty sure we have enough licenses to let Travis and Ron and so on, as well as Kelly and Michael and Paula and Amelia, see the regular transactions and the budget year-to-date stuff. That in a system that's run properly, that's designed correctly, that's a given. So I think my recollection with Tyler is the folks during the operations will have access to the data they need to directly from Tyler.
Okay. Marty, go ahead.
So I don't have any problem with that because I hear it as being an interim report until we get Tyler going. But when we get Tyler going, I would hope that the reports address the incoming amount the people pay to reserves and then shows where it's going.
That's why we bought a fully integrated system. So,
yeah. Okay, so that's fine. So I don't have any problem with proposed here.
Okay, and again, it's not that we're publishing because we're not publishing until the data's been vetted correctly.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Okay. So my final question for Vanessa is just based on your experience in all the different districts, CSDs that you work with, are we intensely complicated as compared to the norm? I mean, you talk about individual enterprise districts that just do water. I mean, the complexity of what we do to run an $8 million company here from a private assessment from the private sector is, I mean, you know, we can't run it on QuickBooks, obviously, you know. So I'm just wondering, is this intensely complicated?
I think it became overly complicated because of the Great Plains decision and the workarounds. And again, I know that I don't know what you were on before that, but historically, I don't see Great Plains. That is not a typical software system I see in any water district, special district that I have. Everybody is unique. You know, I have a wholesale water supplier that they just buy wholesale contracts and sell wholesale contracts. That's about as simple as it can get. And they buy from multiple water sources and then supply to multiple water sources. But then I have, you know, Alameda County Water District is a client of mine. Are they complex? They are complex, but they have a very strong finance department. The gal that runs it worked for Macias Jeannie Ann O'Connell for years doing audits as a CPA prior to taking on, and actually I think worked on that client before taking on the finance director role. So she's very, very strong in governmental accounting, very strong in the debits and credits and the financial reporting. And so it's a very well-run organization. Even with its complexity, they buy from multiple water sources and they supply multiple communities for just water. So it's simplified because it's water, but their rate structure is complicated. Their pay structures, but they're in the news for their pay structure. But they just stay up to date with the information. I believe her total finance department may be about the same size as yours for the whole Alameda County Water District at most. And she's had some vacancies as well, but she's just a very strong finance director and is able to get through an audit of my audit, which is not easy. Do we find errors? Yeah, we still can find errors. So I would think as small as your community is, we can get a handle on it. Your rate structure's complex. And maybe there's some simplification that can happen there. I haven't looked at that. That's not part of my scope of work yet. But Maybe there is a way to simplify your rates and your reserves and all the other things and still accomplish the same goals that the board wants to do and on behalf of the community. And again, that's an operational issue to consider. But you have built, I mean, when I look at your rate structure, it's like this long. When really what you're providing is water, sewer, storm drain, and security. You're really, your only outlier is the security.
Right.
So all the water, storm drainage, all that, everybody has that, right? So for the number of residential and commercial dwellings that you have, I just think it's just been over. When I was there in 2019 fiscal year in 20, I said it had been over-engineered. That was my word that I used. And I think we simplified it some, and maybe there's a process of simplifying it even further to make this work so that you still get the decisions. You can still make the decisions you need to make with the data. Right now, making decisions is difficult because there is no data. So I'd rather simplify it, get it right, and then expand on it after that point.
Okay. All right. I guess we can move directly into garbage here. Tom, item 7.
So this is just an update. We've been working with Cal Waste for the past few months, our vendor of many years, with the organics issue coming up and their need to get more involved in longer-term investing or longer-term investing in their company as the governor requires waste haulers to go towards this organic SB 1383 stuff. They requested that we consider extending our contract with them, which is currently set to expire in 3 years. And so we're looking at a potential of a 13-year franchise agreement where the rate structure will change because it's changing as their expenses change. And then some of the details like adding back at least one of the bulky waste pickups with the new agreement and putting in the rate structure that helps them get to the point where they can feel comfortable that their company will stay solvent with us as a customer over the next, in this case, 13 years. So we've gone back and forth with a handful of edits to the proposed franchise agreement. This morning, Andrew, our attorney, or last night, Andrew, our attorney, sent me an email saying that he's comfortable with the last of a few tweaks that we put on there. So we might be able to see a proposed franchise agreement at the November committee meetings. I just wanted to, we talked about it. The rates for trash are going up January 1. The organic program officially begins January 1. Every trash can is going to cost the district $4 more every month, which if you take into account how many trash cans we have, that's going to be about $10,000, $11,000 a month that the district will be subsidizing people's trash and not getting reimbursed each month by the ratepayers because the fee remains stagnant from last fiscal year. So between now and the end of the year, between July 1 and the end of the year, we will have subsidized probably to the tune of about $80,000 to $85,000 in trash accounts with district funds. And so I think getting this agreement in place, if that's what the board wants to do, will help stabilize the trash rates. And I also think you've heard a couple times, but we're going to hear it more and more as Vanessa gets through with her stuff. It's time the district kind of stepped up and started doing the long-term rate studies, the five-year rate studies, instead of the annual way we've been handling it since day one with just rates that are established just to meet our expenses and not setting a plan structure for rate increases for water, trash, and sewer. So this is kind of just a discussion, and I'm seeing if there's any questions or comments.
The only thing I have, Tom, is when we get this this is the October meeting. Okay, so if you bring this here next month, could we take some of those five-year rate studies that are out there for the county of Sacramento? I think it's Elk Grove or Folsom. I can't remember which that has independent service, independent of the county. Get as many of those as we can, and then compare those to what they would look like with the agreement that we're going to be asked to approve. So in other words, a rate comparison. I understand that we don't have any five-year rate projections, but whatever we can do based on what the rates are in Jack's upcoming agreement, can we try and get a comparative analysis to the county? We haven't done that in years.
We can even more so than you're asking, because in their proposed franchise agreement, they're giving us some estimates of what they think the rates are going to be, because they need to do long-term projections for themselves.
Yeah, well, that'll give us something to talk about, qualitatively. I love these guys and I know the community loves them, but due diligence, I think, just says we take a pass at seeing what the competitive rates would be.
Okay.
And who knows, maybe that's a point where we go back to Jack and say, look, here's a problem. Let's talk about this.
Okay.
Marty?
I don't have any problem with what you just got through saying.
Okay. All right. Next case.
Well, I just want to know if there's any questions for me on the Measure R security special tax. It's I believe the ballots are going to be mailed the end of this week or next week. I think where I'm from, I think we're getting them on the 10th. And then we'll go from there, and just wanted to see if they had any questions, if anybody had any questions. It's a finance committee item. So I thought I'd just throw it out here to discuss. Any questions?
Marty?
I didn't have any questions. It sounds like it's almost in the voters' hands. So.
Yeah, me too. It is what it is. Okay, item nine, we kind of got into this. What is there more to it, Tom?
Camelia, and I do have a hand raised.
Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I would imagine it's still for item number eight, Crystal Matter.
I'm just wondering what the requirements are in terms of Measure R passing or failing. What are the voting parameters?
It's a two-thirds vote to pass.
Two-thirds vote of the votes collected?
Yes.
Of the votes cast, it needs two-thirds plus one.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And last time I looked, and it's been a while, I think we had there. If everybody voted, it would be 4,400 or somewhere in that neighborhood. But we don't get that. We get high participation, but that's 100%. Anything else on that item, Amelia?
No more hands raised.
Okay. Then Marty, anything?
Nope. It's been a productive meeting. Thank you.
If we're moving to 10, Marty, do you have any?
Are we going to discuss item number nine? Did I miss that?
Stay away. I thought we discussed that already.
The only thing I wanted to tell you about developer deposits is we've figured out and we've processed the charges against the deposits. Now we just need to tally those against the actual money coming in through our general ledger, through our miscellaneous accounts receivable process. Because much like you're hearing time and time again, staff turnover has created inconsistent work product. And so finance is currently working to track down all the initial checks and all the subsequent activities in the general ledger accounts to attach as a beginning and ending balance for the developer statements. And we're going to finally send them out. And I will tell you, this it's not going to be a pleasant discussion for some of the developers. But the developers know they have to pay if they're going to play in Rancho Murrieta. And so they know that they're not seeing their developer bills. So they do know that they're on the way sooner or later. So I just wanted to give you an update. It's one of the issues that we get talked about on a monthly basis, and it's dragged on for a long enough time.
I just wanted to make sure, and we talked about this a little bit ago, that when we are prepared to have this final discussion, that it's all in there. Oh, and we've talked about individual line items like Coastland and others. I really want it all on the table at the same time. I understand that there will be negotiation on specific items one at a time, but I want it all out there. I don't want to do this more than once, you know?
Okay.
I have no comments, any staff comments.
Thank you for your patience. It's been a long meeting.
Yeah, and thank you, Vanessa, for helping us out here. All right, if there's nothing else, Amelia, anything else there?
Nothing here.
Okay, then we can move to item 11, which is adjournment. And thanks to everybody, and have a nice day.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.